Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning Daniel Perek Yud Aleph, the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel. This is an incredibly long chapter. It primarily focuses on Greece, then Rome, and then Christianity. We're going to be taking a look at, although it is 45 psukim long, we're going to do something quite unusual, and that is we're going to only focus on the first 40 psukim, and we're going to, the last 5 psukim are going to actually be part of the next chapter, part of the theme of the next chapter, and we'll try to put that together with the last chapter of Daniel, which is much smaller. We're going to do a very brief history overview in order to understand some of these psukim. So the first pasuk over here is section 1. It talks about Darius the Mede, and it talks about how he says, Omdi lemachzik v'lemo'oiz loy. I stood up to strengthen and fortify him. This, as the Malbim explains, is the angel who's talking still, the angel who's communicating with Daniel. Daniel's left standing. He's the only prophet able to stand and see this vision of the angel. And the angel's saying that I was able to give strength to Darius and to convince Darius that, in fact, the reason why Belshazzar died was because of his insolence when treating the nation of Israel with such disrespect and drinking from the kelim of the Migdash. And that way Darius was more open to being more careful about the Migdash, which would lay the groundwork for the return of Israel to build Beis HaMikdash. The Rashi points out this wasn't just a psychological investment. This was actually fighting with the Tsar oppress of the Persian celestial being, which was what we talked about in the last perek. We now move to Pasuk Beis, which is, all this is just laying the groundwork, is for Persia. It describes how he sees three kings, and then a fourth king is very, very rich and powerful. Who are these four kings? There's a discussion in the Mefarshim. Who these could be, we seem to hear about a number of different kings. We hear about Darius the Mede, Cyrus the Great, Ahasuerus, Darius the Persian. Those are the ones that we hear about. That's what Chazal actually identify as being these four kings: Darius the Mede, Cyrus the Great, Ahasuerus, and Darius the Persian. The problem is there really are a few more kings already noted in Tanakh. So, for instance, there's Artaxerxes, who's another king over here. So he seems to be over here. There's Artaxerxes the First, Artaxerxes the Second. Some of the Mefarshim try to debate as to, is Ahasuerus Artaxerxes? Is that Artaxerxes and Xerxes as known academically? Already Rashi, as we're going to see when you get to Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah, notice that there's another monarch which is not noted in the Psukim. His name is Cambyses. And if you look in the Persian annals, you'll see many, many more kings that are not noted in Chazal in Seder Olam Rabbah in Perek Chav Ches, where this is all talked about. So it seems that Chazal are referring to the four most predominant kings that related to the nation of Israel, and that's what's being described over here. That really isn't the focus of this Perek. It seems to be the focus of the Perek really starts from Pasuk Gimel onwards, and this now talks about Greece. Pasuk Gimel Tadala describes how there'll be this warrior king who'll get up and he will take over the known world in all four directions, and then he'll split up into four less powerful substates. This obviously refers to Alexander the Macedonian, Alexander the Great, as he takes over the entire known world. When he dies at the ripe age of 32, there's a discussion as to whether he died of sickness or being poisoned, but nonetheless, when he dies at the age of 32, nobody was expecting this. There was no heir apparent to the throne. And after a few years, there was a peaceable split up between the different arms of his monarchy. So there was Ptolemaic Egypt, Seleucid Mesopotamia and Central Asia, Attalid Anatolia, and Antigonid Macedon. So that all these four provinces became the different areas of the kingdom. And there were a number of unfortunate political assassinations all the way through this to get to that point. So now, bearing that in mind, we now move into Pasuk Hey, where we talk about the king of the south. It talks about the king of the south is able to control and take control of the territory. Remember that our perek is going to be focused around Israel. So Israel is going to be the epicenter of a rather large and multi-generational battle, unfortunately, between the north and the south. What's it referring to? So the kings in the south, the Greek king of Egypt, is a man by the name of Ptolemy. and he is in control. The area is much more powerful at the beginning, and the king in the north is Seleucus. So we're going to deal with these. From Sukkim Vav to Tezayin, we have a pretty long description of this. And we're going to do just a very basic outline based on the Malbim, based on notes of the Abarbanel, to get a sense of what's going on over here, and this is what's being addressed in the Psukim. So we hear that the first two kings, the king of the south is Ptolemy the first Soter, and the king of the north is Seleucus the first Nicator. What happens is that the south is much more powerful, and Ptolemyan Egypt, the Ptolemyan Greeks, take over Israel and it's under their control. However, after years of fighting, a peace is made between their heirs. So the south now is Ptolemy the second Philadelphus, and in the north is Antiochus the second Theos, and they are able to find peace between the two of them. However, the way this works is by marriage. So Ptolemy II convinces Antiochus II to leave his wife, and already the mother of his children, Laodice, and marry his daughter, Bernice, or Berenice. At which point, when Ptolemy II dies, Antiochus II actually leaves the daughter of his colleague in the south, Berenice, and returns to Laodice. Antiochus II dies, and at which point Berenice and her son are murdered by Laodice, who wants to maintain the posterity of the line, not through the co-wife. And when Berenice realizes that her husband had died, she realizes she's in danger. She actually shuts herself up in a tower to be safe and to await the siege, where she actually is killed before her brother Ptolemy III is able to save her. It's too late when he gets there. But in the meantime, Ptolemy III, in revenge, does take a great amount of territory and conquers Seleucia and Antioch, the two main cities, obviously named after the kings, in the area of, this is the area of Syria, which is where the Seleucid Greeks are in control. We do hear about a pushback from the north. So after Ptolemy III returns to his kingdom because of local unrest, he is confronted with an attack from Seleucus II, who is the successor of Antiochus II. He manages to take back certain gains of Ptolemy. But on the way back, he suffers a loss. His whole fleet is destroyed in the storm. We do hear later on that in the north, after the death of Seleucus II, his sons struggle, and Seleucus III, Soter, was assassinated after 4 years of rule, and his younger brother, Antiochus III, takes the reins. Antiochus III is a very powerful person. Just to get a sense of what he does, Antiochus III sets about a campaign to regain the land of Syria and Israel, which is now still under Ptolemyan Greek control, and he succeeds in pushing back Ptolemy IV, Philopater, back down to the south. He regains the northern kingdom. They start negotiating to arrive at peace, but negotiations don't end well, so they return to battle. He sweeps down through Israel and is only held at bay at Rapha, at which time Ptolemy IV pulls off an incredible military move, cultivates an army of 70,000 troops, and pushes the Seleucid Greeks all the way back up north. They return arrogant and jubilant. But Antiochus III is not a man to be beaten, so 14 years later he gathers an incredible army, and after having conquered large swaths of land in Asia Minor, levels a huge campaign against the south, and he is about to conquer the Ptolemy V, Epiphanes, who is at this point was an infant heir of the kingdom run by governors, and he is about to conquer the territory, when at which point in time there is in fact an intercession by Rome, which leads us to, now we're in the Pesukim, is Yud Zayin to Yud Tes, in which that Romans are not interested in Antiochus III taking over Ptolemyan Greek in Egypt, and they send a party to bid for peace between the north and the south. Antiochus does bid for peace, and he does a very clever move where he marries his daughter Cleopatra to Ptolemy V, who's actually a young king at this point in time. He wants Cleopatra to be his fifth column and to create civil unrest in the country, but ultimately she does remain true and strong to her husband. Antiochus thereafter goes and wages war against the islands under the Romans and Thrace, taking over Turkey, conquering much, also with an alliance alliance with Hannibal of Carthage. So he's a very, very powerful person. He was finally beaten back by Lucius Cornelius Scipio just outside Greece, and is dealt a very severe blow, and it was humbled in his loss, the Romans forcing him to give up much of his European land and pay huge penalties at this point in time. Antiochus, seeking money on his way back, it's going to be a theme, plunders the temple of Bel, and because of that, was assassinated by the local inhabitants of Elam there for that terrible crime. So without noting, by the way, as you go, this is bringing us up to Pasuk Yotes, Psukim Yudzayin and Yotes can be read differently. Rashi understands that they're referring to, in fact, Antiochus IV and his persecution of Israel and the reprisal of that. Pasuk Yudalad is also worthwhile noting. Uvaitimahem Rabim Yamdu al Melech HaNegev. In those days, many will go gathered against the king of the south. The Bnei Paritze Amacha Yinasu Ulamid Chazon Nechshalu. And the people, the Bnei Paritze, the lawless sons of your people, will assert themselves to confer the vision, but they will fail. What does it refer to? Who the lawless people of your nation? The angels talking to Daniel. So the Malbim says it'll be the Jews who are under the Ptolemaean dynasty who will see who will see the success of the Ptolemaean Greeks. Of the Seleucid Greeks against the Ptolemaean Greeks as an opportunity to side with them. And then ultimately, because the battle lines go backwards and forwards so many times, they will be assassinated, they will be killed by the Ptolemaean Greeks who see them as dissidents. Rambam in Igeres Teman says it refers to Yashka, it refers to the creation of Christianity. And the Bnei Prietzi Amcha refers to those who are among the Jews who ultimately become a thorn in their sides. We move on to Pasuk Chof, where at this point in time, where we talk about the heir of Seleucus IV, Philopater now takes over from Antiochus after his assassination. Antiochus III, and rules under huge, immense financial pressure from Romans, who are now in control of the area. Finally, he was assassinated of the not-too-long-a rule by one of his ministers. At which point in time, now arrives Antiochus IV, Epiphanes, who's really the main character for the Hanukkah story. He is the oppressor of the Jews. Antiochus IV is actually the brother of Seleucus IV. Seleucus IV, Philopater, was just assassinated as being the heir apparent. Antiochus IV is not the heir to the throne. In fact, Seleucus IV has two children. One, Demetrius, is a hostage in Rome. They're keeping him there as a way to control the area. And he has a younger infant son whose name is Antiochus, also in the area of Syria, in the area of the Seleucid Greeks. However, when Antiochus at this point in time is actually leading a formation of Roman soldiers in Athens, returns to Antioch and stewards and takes the kingdom as a steward while his young nephew Antiochus also is growing up. 6 years later, on a tour outside of the country, Antiochus, the young one, is murdered, and Antiochus IV takes the reins. He kills the murderers and becomes the king of the Seleucid Greek kingdom. He goes about a campaign to now start against the Egyptians. He slanders them to the Senate in Rome. Rome's too busy, but he goes and manages to get in, because remember, his sister is Cleopatra. He manages to get into, she is the queen ruler. He is able to get into Egypt, and he sets about trying to create anger and dissonance between the two sons of Cleopatra, Ptolemy the VI and VII. And is able to successfully create a revolt and a lot of unrest in Egypt at this time, upon which he realizes the full revolt isn't ready. He returns to the north and brings about an army a few years later, and is able to try to besiege Alexandria, at which point in time he's able to have great victory, because he bribes many of the local governors, and the governor of Cyprus defects to his side, and Alexandria falls. He is able to capture the older brother, Ptolemy the VI, and pretends to be on his side in order to fight against Ptolemy the VII, who's still with the Alexandrians, who remains strong, and tries to create unrest between the two of them to create a civil war, returns to this to Syria, and in the meantime, the brothers are smarter than he thought and join forces against their uncle, Antiochus IV. You can imagine, you can just appreciate the complexity of this narrative. This is all discussed as Remazim in each of the Psukim, as the Rabbi Ben Elamel point out. Antiochus, now at this point in time, we're now in Psukim Choftes, going on. Antiochus hears the betrayal of Ptolemy IV, and of Ptolemy the VI and VII together against him, and returns to Egypt with a huge army, and is not so successful because the Romans send ships as is described over here, Ubo Tziyim Kitziyim in Pasuk Lamed, and they force Antiochus to retreat, because they're obviously much more powerful than him. At which point he returns through Israel, and this is where we hear a little bit Ramazim hints to the campaign against the Jews. The Jews themselves are not doing so well. They're in a Hellenized environment. Onias or Chonia, who was the Kohen Gadol, dies. His son is too young to assume his role, but his brother Jason, he used to be Yeshua but changed his name to a Hellenized form, Jason, gives Antiochus a huge bribe to be cut to get the post as Kohen Gadol. Antiochus then overreaches him and gives it to another person by the name of Melanus, who's not even a Kohen, because Melanus gives him a larger bribe. So there's this terrible amount of corruption going on among the Jews. At the times when Antiochus is in a war in the south, in Egypt, there's rumors that Antiochus dies, at which point Jason besieges Jerusalem with his troops to try to take, to wrest the Kohen Gadol from Melanus, who superseded him. At which point Antiochus returns and massacres all of Jason's folks and plunders the city. Remember that the Jews are the ones who are offering him all these bribes from the temple coffers. He realizes the temple coffers have gold and silver, and so he plunders it upon another campaign and massacres many of the Jews there. This is part of the Chanukah story as well. At this point, by the way, it's important to notice that the Perek does not give so much time to the Chashmonaim. That was actually referred to early on in some of the earlier prophecies as Ramazim. It's not referred to here. This seems to be more of a holistic perspective. We hear from Pasuk Lamed Aleph onwards now about the rise of Rome. Lamed Aleph to Lamed Hay, we hear about the rise of Rome. It talks about how they'll destroy the temple, the base of Hamikdash of Herod, Hordus, that will stop the Talmud. He talks about Hadrian crushing the rebellion of Bar Kokhba. He talks about the innuendo of that Bar Kokhba and its false hope as a rebellion. He talks of Mashiach coming and the possibility of the different times that Mashiach can possibly come in this time. He's ad eist keitz ki od lamoed. There's going to be another time, even if it's not this time. And then we move into the psukim Lamed Vav to Lamed Tes, in which we talk now about what the Abar Ben Yael and the Malbim assume to be the rise of Christianity. The rise of Christianity is not just when Yoshka lived. It refers to later on in the year, around the year 300 Common Era, when we hear of the rise of an emperor called Constantine the First. From 308 to 337 Common Era is when he ruled, and he was instrumental in turning the Roman Empire into the Holy Roman Empire under the church. He made the religion of the church to be Christian. And you hear when you read these psukim about how he talks about the false beliefs he'll spread. And there's a certain dissonance about Constantine using the religion, certainly through the Council of Nicaea in 325 Common Era, into a way of uniting his political kingdom. And it describes how, at the same time, Christianity will honor God and make beautiful buildings and fortresses, referring to churches, and it will have a huge amount of power and ultimately own a huge amount of land. So there seems to be an incredible description all the way from Persia through Greece, through all the different vicissitudes of Greek kingdom and the complications within, the rise of Rome, and ultimately the rise of Christianity. So there's a lot of history which is covered over here and a lot of narrative on that history. This perek is so large, it is pretty clear that there's no way to go through pasuk by pasuk, but this at least is an overall perspective. We're leaving it at pasuk mem. We will continue with pasuk men as we attempt to attach it to the last perek of Daniel, perek Yud Beis. With this, we close perek Yud Aleph. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.